I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and we're joined today by a guest named Laura Zinfrom.
Hi.
Hi, and she has just written a book that is really, really lovely, really confessional and personal, and I really enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
It is called Sweet Survival, Tales of Cooking and Coping. Congrats.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Laura, you come from a background of journalism. You've been an editor at Business Week. Mm-hmm. You've written for the New York Times. And you also have an MFA in creative writing from Columbia University.
I do.
So this is quite a departure. You talk a little bit about some writing influences, like MFK Fisher in this book.
Yeah, absolutely.
What other folks do you admire in this sort of food narrative?
I loved Bill Buford's Heat. Mm-hmm. Of course, I love Julia Child. Everything she wrote, I love. I loved Gabrielle Hamilton's book, Blood, Bones, and Butter.
Yeah.
But then I'm also very influenced by just people who write memoir, like Mary Carr, who wrote Lit.
Yeah.
And Cheryl Strayed, who wrote Wild. And maybe they mentioned food in those books, but they just were great writers, so they influenced me as well.
I can definitely see that, and MFK Fisher definitely is.
I love her.
Yeah, it's just such a classic. And you know, I was kind of thinking about the genre of like the narrative, sort of memoir, food essay, personal food writing as a genre, and I was wondering why we don't see more other like hobbies or crafts being written about in such a way.
Do you know what's funny? I was talking about that last night with my sister-in-law because we're all so food obsessed, and and she's a psychologist, and we were trying to figure out like why do we all talk and write about food so much?
Not like I don't know, basketball or
well, you know, and I think the thing is like that we do three. All of us do three things. We all sleep. We all go to the bathroom, and we all eat. You know, some people play basketball, some people, like, you know, create sculptures, but, like, we all do these three things where you're not going to talk about, you know, sleeping or going to the bathroom because they're boring and kind of gross, but everybody eats. So it's, like, a very natural conversation starter, you know, and it's something we can all
It's universal.
Yeah. So I think that's why. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's so much good food available now, and I think it's become this massive phenomenon of just cooking and talking about it, and I've certainly signed on to that plan, but I think there's a lot of food narrative going on, which is really good.
Yeah, and I love how you came into food writing a little bit later because you know you're writing about business and politics, and you mentioned that you kind of departed from journalism when you had your second child, sort of like moved to the suburbs, had a second child. And you mentioned that some other journalists that you knew kind of took up blogging as a way to flex their creative muscles, other women that you knew in the same sort of boat.
I mean, I was blogging, too, and I was blogging about, you know, sort of typical parenting issues. But I wasn't having an experience that was unique to me. You know, 8 zillion people out there are raising children in the suburbs. So I was looking for a way to start a column for a local online newspaper, and I decided to write about food because where we live, everybody, you know, wants to eat, but there's not a lot of great takeout. So people just cook. I mean, you go out to eat, too. But so I started writing about cooking, and the column became popular, and then I started writing about it for Huffington Post because my editor moved there. And So I found writing about food gave me a way to also write about emotions and family life and sort of like the psychodynamics of being an adult.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was at Business Week, you know, I wrote about all these public companies and it was very exciting, but, you know, it was on some level,
totally,
you know,
different.
Very detached and very impersonal, which is what business writing has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I had done that for a long time and I was just ready to like... write about feelings, I guess, which I was able to do through writing.
Congrats
about food.
For doing that. I think that's really bold. And I really thought that a lot of your story was so, it was really relatable. I mean, I don't have kids yet or anything, but, you know, you mentioned that when you did decide to leave journalism, leave being a staff writer at Business Week, you felt sort of a little depressed. You became a little bit lost and needed to find something else to do with your time other than be a stay-at-home mom.
Well, you make a really good point, which is I think if you're home with your kids or you're home doing anything really and you don't have a lot of structure, you have to find a way to structure your day, you know, if that's going to be like going to work out or walking your dog or whatever. But like there have to be certain marks that you hit. Otherwise, you're just going to lie in bed and look at your email or, you know, watch reality TV. So I found that like dinner gave me something to sort of build my day around.
Right.
And something to work towards. And
that's,
you know,
not insignificant at all.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you on that. I love, though, something that I thought was very timely that you wrote about that time. If you wouldn't mind, I'm going to read a passage.
Sure.
Okay. Speaking of other colleagues, you write, neither of us had figured out that you could have any... Wait, sorry. Neither of us had figured out yet that you could have anything you wanted as an adult. You just couldn't have everything. We thought we should have everything, even though we didn't know anyone who did. Most of the successful female journalists I knew were divorced or never married. A few of them were widows. One of the most successful women I knew was married and then had a baby with another married editor. I didn't think I could be a full-time journalist and have anything close to a happy family life.
I did think that, you know, it was this time when to me, anyway, it appeared that your career was very all or nothing, you know, and you either three. I mean, when I was working at Business Week, I was there 6 or 7 days a week. I was often there on Saturday nights. I was definitely
working
there
into the night.
Yeah, like that was just my life, and I ate crap and, you know, Reese's peanut butter cups, and like I didn't care. But I didn't want that to be the way I operated as a parent. I just thought that would make me dysfunctional and my kids, you know, junk food addicts. So I didn't see how I could make it work. And I mean, that was years ago. People make it work, and there's, you know, lots of people.
There's books about that, making it work, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I didn't think I could do it, you know. So and truthfully, I probably could have done it, and I probably should have done it.
But at what cost, you know?
At that point, I didn't think I could. So... anyway, so now...
And another interesting sort of phenomenon that happened was the type of job you had, being a staff editor at a magazine, is sort of falling, like the ground is falling out from beneath it, you know, these types of positions, and journalism is not what it used to be.
No, not at all. And I probably ultimately would have either lost my job or been eased out of it, you know, because Business Week was bought by Bloomberg, and maybe I would have stayed on. But, you know, and I did see plenty of people stay on and make it work as parents, but at the time it just seemed, you know, overwhelming to me, which was just probably silly. But
So this book is a series of, I guess, vignettes, essays, stories, about, in particular, coping and survival. That's the sort of unified theme.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I mean, I came from a family where my mother is a fantastic cook. And so I grew up eating these wonderful meals, you know, no matter what. Dinner was in the dining room. You know, we used silver on china, and the food was wonderful. And that was like a constant in my life. Mm-hmm. But my father was very volatile and difficult. So it was like this sort of weird contrast of having like the chaos of him with my mother's like very beautiful dining. But I learned that, like, you know, cooking was the unifying thing. That was how you sort of got through the day. That's how you made sure that everybody ended the day, you know, sort of calmly and happily and at least well fed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of what I've tried to do for my own family.
You mentioned a particularly rough year in the introduction where a few people close to you have passed on. Do you find that cooking was something that picked up at times of great distress and something you did more?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I find whenever I'm feeling any kind of anxiety, I just think, okay, how am I going to get back into the kitchen? What am I going to make? And sometimes I'll make something that I've made 100 times before, but sometimes that, like, the challenge of learning a new recipe, like, just takes you to another place, you know, and sort of makes some of the difficulties recede. So, yeah, absolutely.
Focusing on something that is nourishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think just the sort of the repetition, like, of moving your hands and chopping, like, it does soothe your mind. There's something meditative about it.
Yeah.
So I find that, you know, in times of stress, cooking is a huge relief. Plus, yeah. You get something good to eat as a result.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
You know, that helps de-stress you.
Yeah. And so what's more therapeutic, cooking or writing about it? Because you seem to do a lot of
that's
both.
That's really... Oh, probably writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I am first and foremost a writer. But, you know, it's easier to cook for an hour sometimes than it is to write.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably will cook more in a week sometimes than I do. I actually write. But I find both. You know,
yeah.
I find anytime you're sitting still, I think, and doing something repetitive, whether it's typing on the keyboard or chopping onions, I think it can help be a coping mechanism.
Totally. I wonder if you've gotten this question a lot, because I remember when I was first starting to write about food and getting obsessed and writing my little ditties about recipes that I meet up, people would always say, oh, so when are you going to open the restaurant, Kathy? Like, or when are you going to open the bakery or something like that? I'm like, no, I'm just doing this because I have to, like, I want to. It's not for a restaurant. Did you get that?
You know what? I actually worked in my cousin's bakery for a mm-hmm. while. After I left Business Week, my cousin had a bakery downtown, and it was called Charles and Laurel Desserts. And so I saw how hard it was to, you know, and it was a small bakery, but he, you know, had a staff, and he had to constantly, like, deal with ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I after that, as much as I enjoyed being there, I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah. It's totally different.
It's very different. It's very different. And, you know, some of it involves cooking, but a lot of it is managing people and mm-hmm. buying ingredients and, you know, negotiating with, you know, whoever you're selling your food to. So I don't think a restaurant is, or a bakery is in my future anytime soon.
It also kind of sucks the fun out of it, too, when you have to do it to make ends meet.
You know, I think it's like a different skill. It's running a business, which, you know, I'm not sure I'm qualified to do. So, but, you know, I love going to restaurants, so kudos to whoever can make one work.
So, yeah, I mean, and kudos also for making writing about food, like, the end all be all, and, like, and also that delicious meal, which you know, you write so eloquently about how rewarding that is in itself.
Well, you know, because you write about food. It, you know, it, no matter, usually whatever you're making, if you follow the recipe and the recipe is reliable, it will turn out, you mm-hmm. know, and you can adjust it if you need to. But it is very rewarding, and then you know, you can eat it by yourself and feel ecstatic you have all this food to yourself, or you can share it, which is
sharing
more lovely.
Yeah, and now of course you have this book, which I'm curious, how long did it take to write? Because there's essays about life events that happened throughout your life, strewn throughout.
Well, I started writing it probably in 2011, I think. I started writing this column about cooking and coping, but I also teach part time, so mm-hmm. I was juggling that. And and then I started writing a memoir about my father's family, which had nothing to do with cooking.
Okay.
And I ended up merging that into this for various reasons. My dad had a sort of a crazy story in his family, and I ended up writing about it. And I did combine it with food. Which,
tell me, what was the crazy story?
My father had a cousin, a lovely woman, who had adopted baby, and the adoption ended up being reversed. So she and her husband kidnapped the baby. I mean, it was their baby. They disappeared with it and disappeared for more than 20 years. And I didn't really know anything about them. But after my dad passed away, this woman resurfaced and reached out to me. So I ended up having this really lovely conversation, many email conversations with her. And then I flew out to meet her husband. And that became part of my story.
Mm-hmm.
So that took me a solid year to do. So I guess I worked on it for 2 to 3 years.
Wow. Well, congrats to that.
Thank you.
We'll talk more about it right after a quick little commercial interlude.
You are listening to Aztec Soldiers by Spiral Jetty Club. We'll be right back.
shine forever.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, my name is Betsy Andrews, executive editor of Savera Magazine, and I am hanging out at the coolest, most delicious place in the world, HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we're chatting more with Laura Zinfrom, the author of Sweet Survival, Tales of Cooking and Coping. And the book just came out from, where is it? Green Point Press.
Yep.
So, first book for you, so
first
congrats.
First book for me, yeah.
So we're talking a little bit about your dad's story, but I, you know, throughout this book, there's stories about food and cooking them, but they always have characters, and they're always tied, like a recipe is always sort of tied to a certain character in your life.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, you're right,
and,
you're right.
You know, from folks like the grandmother you wish you had,
yes.
Who is actually your, wait, like, so it's your husband's best friend's wife's mother.
My husband's best friend's mother.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Lolly.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So, and her cooking was a huge influence.
You know, she's alive and well. She's just a lovely person, and we would go up to, they have a house in Connecticut, and we would go there when we were young and living in like little tiny cramped quarters in the city, and she had this nice house with a nice pool, and she was always cooking and bringing out platters of food, and it was always delicious, and it was very basic. It was like little hot dogs and this sort of yummy combination of mustard and jam, and you know, she made this great thing called a cake in a cup, you know, where you literally can like put cocoa powder and eggs and flour and vanilla in a cup and put in your microwave, and it becomes this like delicious cake. It's in there.
Cool.
And she, everything she did was like easy and delicious, and she has just this sort of a very charming, welcoming way about her. So I ended up writing an essay about her.
For Lolly.
And then I introduced her to her boyfriend, which is
thing
I'm most
proud
of.
That is wonderful.
In
yes.
My life. And they're still together.
You set them up.
I set them up. Yep. So they're together. So
a lot of
nice
characters throughout. Do you think that writing about these stories or cooking their dishes that you learned from them kind of allow you to see them in a different way or understand them any better?
Yeah, I think I do actually. I think when I started writing about Lolly, I realized like she had four sons, and then her husband passed away, and I realized
no daughters.
No, it happens, and I just realized like how much she must have enjoyed having people around, because people were always at her house, and there were always trays and trays of food that she and her mother, who lived with her, were preparing, and it made me think a lot about what motivated her and what helped her sort of stay sane and happy, you know, while raising all these kids. And yeah, it gave me a lot of insight into her, actually. So,
yeah, I definitely can tell that. And there's some stories about other characters, like your cooking teacher and friend Arlene, who taught you just very simple, basic.
But she has her own cookbook called Pressure Cooking for Everyone, and which she wrote, I think, with Rick Rogers. And she now is. She owned a big cooking store in New Jersey for a while, and now she goes around and teaches at different cooking studios. And she taught me how to use a pressure cooker, which I was afraid of.
I'd never mastered that, I'm afraid. Yeah.
It's actually not hard, but I would recommend either watching a video about it or like
not being able to see what's going inside, what's going on.
Right, you know. Yeah. I mean, you have to sort of like give yourself over to your faith in the pressure cooker. But it actually makes, I mean, I've made like millions of different risottos in there and steamed vegetables, and things come out really well in a pressure cooker. Anyway, she taught me, and she also taught me a bunch of other things, like buy white china. Food looks better, you know, on white, and this is how you make vanilla vinaigrette. And so she's just this very sort of practical, resourceful cook. And she had learned from her own mother, who had been a very successful
It definitely
cook.
Made me realize that, like, the way I cook, the way you cook, the way we all cook is, like, just really a combination of people's influences throughout the years. And sometimes the most random people, or sometimes somebody very close to you.
And it's a nice way to spend time with someone. You know, like, I have found that, like, I end up getting to know people better, you know, as we're, like, assembling a salad or roasting a chicken in a class in a way that I probably never would have. Otherwise, you know, but at the end you have this nice thing you've made, and you have sort of, you know, a burgeoning friendship, which is nice to have.
Totally. Tell me about one of the interesting characters that walks through this book is Craig Claiborne.
Oh.
And yeah. I was really impressed that your mom at one point managed to talk him into coming to dinner.
It is a crazy... No, it was lunch.
It was lunch. Okay.
She had a friend who had built our kitchen, actually, and his name is John Cristaldi, and he was trying... She was trying to help him generate business, you know.
So she's trying to help her friend's business.
So she... And he was a good cook, and my mom's an excellent cook. Okay. So she typed out a letter, you know, in the late 1970s. Sent it in the mail. This was like typewriter mailed times. And he came. His driver drove him out. He came, you know, he had wine, you know, and with lunch. And my mother and John Cristaldi made him this big, elaborate meal. And then he wrote about it, you know, in the Times. And it was great for everyone.
So he wrote about the meal that was served to him at a home, at a person's home.
Yeah.
And through that, your friend John had maybe a mention about his business.
His business increased. My mother went into the public relations business because she...
Good for her.
Yeah, right. Because she was good at it. And I guess Craig Claiborne had a story for the day or the week.
Okay.
And everybody got a good lunch out of it.
That is so clever. Have you tried doing that with any food critics?
I actually haven't tried.
We should try it.
I would
see
try.
What happens.
Yeah. See if we can get some big reviewer coming.
Come out down to.
Yeah, I would do that. I mean, I think sometimes people, you know, you sort of imagine that an editor, you know, at a major newspaper has a zillion things to write about, and sometimes they don't, you know, and sometimes you just, the right letter at the right time can capture someone's attention.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. I
think that's very clever.
Food entices people.
Yes, you know. Definitely. So you talk a little bit about holiday food and celebrating various different holidays through food. And you grew up in Midwood? Or no, your family, your father's family is from Midwood.
My mother's family is from Midwood and my father's family is from Borough Park. I grew up in New Jersey. My parents moved there when I was like 5 or 6.
Okay. So you celebrated with some classic treats, and I was loving the chapter that had like shakshuka and what else was it?
oh, cooking for a crowd.
What is this? Okay, yeah. And which holiday was that?
That was actually post my father's Shiva.
Oh, father's Shiva.
Which,
sorry about that.
No, it's totally fine. I mean, that was when it really, I realized when my dad passed away and we had all this food that, like, people want to eat. They want to congregate and they want to eat.
Uh-huh.
Happy times, sad times, you know. I learned to make shakshuka after visiting my husband's family in Israel. He has quite a number of relatives in Israel. And it, one of the cousins made this dish, which I was blown away by. So I came back and learned how to make it.
I love the food in that chapter, the artichoke frittata. It sounds like you guys had a really good meal for the Shiva. why not?
You try to make the best of it, you know, and everyone wants to eat.
The best send-off. All right. Well, what are you working on these days? So are you still doing journalism or?
I write for the Huffington Post.
Yeah, cooking and coping.
About cooking and coping. I have a couple pieces coming out this week. I think my next book, assuming I get myself together to write the next book, is going to be something. I was thinking something more about being a girl in middle age. And I will probably include recipes in it, but just about, you know, entering being 50-something and How do you make that work? And you look like you're 20, so
this
probably doesn't
resonate. A girl in middle age.
I'm trying to hold on to your girldom, you know, in middle age, but it's very preliminary.
Interesting.
I'm not sure.
I wasn't sure if you're going with like a girl from the Middle Ages or the.
Oh, no. No, it will not be a historical book. No,
novel.
Definitely not.
Okay.
Very current.
All right. Well, that sounds exciting. And I'm glad that you've really departed from business. Because I really think that you hit a stride. And there's something that is so just intimate about writing about food.
It is.
I think you really, like, liberated your voice here. And I really enjoyed. And not that I, like, read your Business Insider pieces, but I think that, you know, you're definitely onto something, and I really enjoyed this book.
Oh,
so.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I'll look for your book, too.
Thanks. And MFK Fisher is very much, you know, an inspiration that is very still alive today, alive and well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's really nice to see folks still kind of latching onto this genre.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is a great new book, so I hope everyone checks it out. Sweet Survival, Tales of Cooking and Coping. And thanks so much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So that's about all the time we've got for today. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, there.
I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.